or is crowned with spires of reflective whitish-silvery material. They seemed to pierce the sky like shining daggers, and Simon realized where he had seen that material before. In the hard, glass-like weapons the Shadow Hunters carried, the ones they called Seraph Blades.
"Those are the Demon Towers," Jay said, in response to Simon's unasked question. "They control the wards that protect the city. Because of them, no demon can enter Alicante."
The air that came in through the window was cold and clean, the sort of air you never breathed in New York City. It tasted of nothing, not dirt or smoke or metal or other people, just air. Simon took a deep, unnecessary breath of it before he turned to look at Jace. Some human habits died hard.
"Tell me," he said, "that bringing me here was an accident. Tell me this wasn't somehow all part of you wanting to stop Clary from coming with you."
Jace didn't look at him, but his chest rose and fell once, quickly, in a sort of suppressed gasp.
"That's right," he said. "I created a bunch of Forsaken Warriors, had them attack the Institute and kill Madeline, and nearly kill the rest of us, just so that I could keep Clary at home. And lo and behold, my diabolical plan is working."
"Well, it is working," Simon said quietly. "Isn't it?"
"Listen, vampire," Jay said. "Keeping Clary from Idris was the plan. Bringing you here was not the plan. I brought you through the portal because if I'd left you behind, bleeding and unconscious, the Forsaken would have killed you."
"You could have stayed behind with me."
"They would have killed us both. I couldn't even tell how many of them there were, not with the Hellmist. Even I can't fight off 100 Forsaken."
"And yet," Simon said, "I bet it pains you to admit that."
"You're an ass," Jay said without inflection. "Even for a downworlder. I saved your life and I broke the law to do it. Not for the first time, I might add. You could show a little gratitude."
"Gratitude?" Simon felt his fingers curl in against its palms. "If you hadn't dragged me to the Institute, I wouldn't be here. I never agreed to this."
"You did," said Jace, "when you said you'd do anything for Clary. This is anything."
Before Simon could snap back an angry retort, there was a knock on the door.
"Hello?" Isabel called from the other side. "Simon, is your diva moment over? I need to talk to Jace."
"Come in, Izzy."
Jace didn't take his eyes off Simon. There was an electric anger in his gaze and a sort of challenge that made Simon long to hit him with something heavy, like a pickup truck. Isabel entered the room in a swirl of black hair and tiered silvery skirts. The ivory corset top she wore left her arms and shoulders, twined with inky runes, bare. Simon supposed it was a nice change of pace for her to be able to show her marks off in a place where no one would think them out of the ordinary.
"Alex going up to the guard," Isabel said without preamble. "He wants to talk to you about Simon before he leaves. Can you come downstairs?"
"Sure."
Jace headed for the door. Halfway there, he realized Simon was following him and turned with a glower.
"You stay here." "No," Simon said. "If you're going to be discussing me, I want to be there for it."
For a moment, it looked as if Jace's icy calm were about to snap. He flushed and opened his mouth, his eyes flashing. Just as quickly, the anger vanished, tamped down by an obvious act of will. He gritted his teeth and smiled.
"Fine," he said. "Come on downstairs, vampire. You can meet the whole happy family."
The first time Clary had gone through a portal, there had been a sense of flying, of weightless tumbling. This time, it was like being thrust into the heart of a tornado. Howling winds tore at her, ripped her hand from Luke's and the scream from her mouth. She fell whirling through the heart of a black and gold maelstrom. Something flat and hard and silvery like the surface of a mirror rose up in front of her. She plunged toward it, shrieking, throwing her hands up to cover her face. She struck the surface and broke through into a world of brutal cold and gasping suffocation. She was sinking through a thick blue darkness trying to breathe, but she couldn't draw air into her lungs, only more of the freezing coldness. Suddenly, she was seized by the back of her coat and hauled upward. She kicked feebly, but was too weak to break the hold on her. It drew her up, and the indigo darkness around her turned to pale blue and then to gold as she broke the surface of the water. It was water, and sucked in a gasp of air. Or tried to. Instead, she choked and gagged, black spots dotting her vision. She was being dragged through the water, fast, weeds catching and tugging at her legs and arms.
She twisted around in the grip that held her and caught a terrifying glimpse of something. Not quite wolf, and not quite human. Ears as pointed as daggers and lips drawn back from sharp white teeth. She tried to scream, but only water came up. A moment later, she was out of the water and being flung onto damp, hard-packed earth. There were hands on her shoulders, slamming her face down against the ground. The hands struck her back over and over until her chest spasmed and she coughed up a bitter stream of water. She was still choking when the hands rolled her onto her back. She was looking up at Luke, a black shadow against a high blue sky touched with white clouds. The gentleness she was used to seeing in his expression was gone. He was no longer wolf-like, but he looked furious. He hauled her into a sitting position, shaking her hard over and over until she gasped and struck out at him weakly. "Luke, stop it. You're hurting me." His hands left her shoulders. He grabbed her chin in one hand instead, forcing her head up, his eyes searching her face.
"The water," he said. "Did you cough up all the water?"
"I think so," she whispered. Her voice came faintly from her swollen throat.
"Where is your stele?" he demanded.
And when she hesitated, his voice sharpened.
"Clary, your stele. Find it."
She pulled away from his grasp and rummaged in her wet pockets, her heart sinking as her fingers scrabbled against nothing but damp material. She turned a miserable face up to Luke. "I think I must have dropped it in the lake," she sniffled. My mother's stele."
"Jesus, Clary."
Luke stood up, clasping his hands distractedly behind his head. He was soaking wet, too, water running off his jeans and heavy flannel coat in thick rivulets. The spectacles he usually wore halfway down his nose were gone. He looked down at her somberly.
"You're all right," he said.
It wasn't really a question.
"I mean, right now, you feel all right?"
She nodded. "Luke, what's wrong? Why do we need my stele?" Luke said nothing. He was looking around as if hoping to glean some assistance from their surroundings. Clary followed his gaze. They were on the wide dirt bank of a good-sized lake. The water was pale blue, sparked here and there with reflected sunlight. She wondered if it was the source of the gold light she'd seen through the half-open portal. There was nothing sinister about the lake now that she was next to it instead of in it. It was surrounded by green hills dotted with trees just beginning to turn russet in gold. Beyond the hills rose high mountains, their peaks capped in snow. Clary shivered. "Luke, when we were in the water, did you go part wolf? I thought I saw..."
"My wolf self can swim better than my human self," Luke said shortly. "And it's stronger. I had to drag you through the water, and you weren't offering much help."
"I know," she said. "I'm sorry, you weren't supposed to come with me."
"If I hadn't, you'd be dead now," he pointed out. "Magnus told you, Clary. You can't use a portal to get into the Glass City unless you have someone waiting for you on the other side."
"He said it was against the law. He didn't say if I tried to get there, I'd bounce off."
"He told you there are wards up around the city that prevent portaling into it. It's not his fault you decided to play around with magic you just barely understand. Just because you have power doesn't mean you know how to use it," he scowled.
"I'm sorry," Clary said in a small voice. "It's just... where are we now?"
"Lake Lynn," said Luke. "I think the portal took us as close to the city as it could and then dumped us. We're on the outskirts of Alicante."
He looked around, shaking his head half in amazement and half in weariness.
"You did it, Clary. We're in Idris."
"Idris?" Clary said, and stood staring stupidly out across the lake. It twinkled back at her, blue and undisturbed. "But you said we were on the outskirts of Alicante. I don't see the city anywhere."
"We're miles away," Luke pointed. "You see those hills in the distance? We have to cross over those. The city is on the other side. If we had a car, we could get there in an hour. But we're going to have to walk, which will probably take all afternoon." He squinted up at the sky. "We'd better get going."
Clary looked down at herself in dismay. The prospect of a day-long hike and soaking wet clothes did not appeal. "Isn't there anything else?"
"Anything else we can do?" Luke said, and there was a sharp edge of anger to his voice. "Do you have any suggestions, Clary, since you're the one who brought us here?"
He pointed away from the lake.
"That way lie mountains. Passable on foot only in high summer. We'd freeze to death on the peaks."
He turned, stabbed his finger in another direction.
That way lie miles of woods. They run all the way to the border. They're uninhabited, at least by human beings. Past Alicante, there's farmland and country houses. Maybe we could get out of Idris, but we'd still have to pass through the city. A city, I may add, where downworlders like myself are hardly welcome.
Clary looked at him with her mouth open.
Luke, I didn't know. Of course you didn't know. You don't know anything about Idris. You don't even care about Idris. You were just upset about being left behind, like a child, and you had a tantrum. And now we're here, lost and freezing and...
He broke off, his face tight.
Come on, let's start walking.
Clary followed Luke along the edge of Lake Lynn in a miserable silence. As they walked, the sun dried her hair and skin, but the velvet coat held water like a sponge. It hung on her like a lead curtain as she tripped hastily over rocks and mud, trying to keep up with Luke's long-legged stride. She made a few further attempts at conversation, but Luke remained stubbornly silent. She'd never done anything so bad before that an apology hadn't softened Luke's anger. This time, it seemed, was different. The cliffs rose higher around the lakes as they progressed, pocked with spots of darkness, like splashes of black paint. As Clary looked more closely, she realized they were caves in the rock. Some looked like they went very deep, twisting away into darkness. She imagined bats and creepy crawling things hiding in the blackness and shivered. At last, a narrow path cutting through the cliffs led them to a wide road lined with crushed stones. The lake curved away behind them, indigo, in the late afternoon sunlight. The road cut through a flat, grassy plain that rose to rolling hills in the distance. Clary's heart sank. The city was nowhere in sight. Luke was staring toward the hills with a look of intense dismay on his face.
We're farther than I thought. It's been such a long time.
Maybe if we found a bigger road, Clary suggested, we could hitchhike or get a ride to the city or...
Clary, there are no cars in Idris. Seeing her shocked expression, Luke laughed without much amusement. The wards foul up the machinery. Most technology doesn't work here. Mobile phones, computers, the like. Alicante itself is lit and powered mostly by witchlight.
Oh, Clary said in a small voice. Well, about how far from the city are we?
Far enough.
Without looking at her, Luke raked both his hands back through his short hair.
There's something I better tell you.
Clary tensed. All she'd wanted before was for Luke to talk to her. Now she didn't want it anymore. It's all right.
Did you notice, Luke said, that there weren't any boats on Lake Lynn? No docks. Nothing that might suggest the lake is used in any way by the people of Idris.
I just thought that was because it was so remote.
It's not that remote. A few hours from Alicante on foot. The fact is, the lake...
Luke broke off and sighed.
Did you ever notice the pattern on the library floor at the Institute in New York?
Clary blinked. I did, but I couldn't figure out what it was.
It was an angel rising out of a lake holding a cup and a sword. It's a repeating motif in Nephilim decorations. The legend is that the angel Raziel rose out of Lake Lynn when he first appeared to Jonathan Shadowhunter, the first of the Nephilim, and gave him the mortal instruments. Ever since then, the lake has been...
Sacred? Clary suggested.
Cursed, Luke said. The water of the lake is in some way poisonous to Shadowhunters. It won't hurt downworlders. The fair folk call it the Mirror of Dreams, and they drink its water because they claim it gives them true visions. But for a shadow hunter to drink the water is very dangerous. It causes hallucinations, fever. It can drive a person to madness.
Clary felt cold all over. That's why you tried to make me spit the water out.
Luke nodded. And why I wanted you to find your stele. With a healing rune, we could stave off the water's effects. Without it, we need to get you to Alicante as quickly as possible. There are medicines, herbs that will help. And I know someone who will almost certainly have them.
The Lightwoods?
Not the Lightwoods. Luke's voice was firm. Someone else. Someone I know.
Who?
He shook his head. Let's just pray this person hasn't moved away in the last 15 years.
But I thought you said it was against the law for downworlders to come into Alicante without permission. His answering smile was a reminder of the Luke who had caught her when she'd fallen off the jungle gym as a child. the Luke who had always protected her.
Some laws are meant to be broken.
The Penhallows' house reminded Simon of the Institute. It had that same sense of belonging somehow to another era. The halls and stairways were narrow, made of stone and dark wood, and the windows were tall and thin, giving out onto views of the city. There was a distinctly Asian feel to the decorations. A shoji screen stood on the first floor landing, and there were lacquer-flowered, tall Chinese vases on the windowsills. There were also a number of silk screen prints on the walls, showing what must have been scenes from Shadow Hunter mythology, but with an Eastern feel to them. Warlords wielding glowing seraph blades were prominently featured, alongside colorful dragon-like creatures and slithering pop-eyed demons.
Mrs. Penhallow, Gia, used to run the Beijing Institute. She splits her time between here and the Forbidden City, Isabel said as Simon paused to examine a print. And the Penhallows are an old family, wealthy.
I can tell, Simon muttered, looking up at the chandeliers dripping cut glass crystals like teardrops. Jace on the step behind them grunted, Move it along. We're not taking a historical tour here.
Simon weighed a rude retort and decided it wasn't worth bothering. He took the rest of the stairs at a rapid pace. They opened out at the bottom into a large room. It was an odd mixture of the old and the new. A glass picture window looked out onto the canal, and there was music playing from a stereo that Simon couldn't see. But there was no television, no stack of DVDs or CDs, the sort of detritus Simon associated with modern living rooms. Instead, there were a number of overstuffed couches grouped around a large fireplace, in which flames were crackling. Alex stood by the fireplace in dark Shadowhunter gear, drawing on a pair of gloves. He looked up as Simon entered the room and scowled his habitual scowl, but said nothing. Seated on the couches were two teenagers Simon had never seen before, a boy and a girl. The girl looked as if she were partly Asian, with delicate almond-shaped eyes, glossy dark hair pulled back from her face, and a mischievous expression. Her delicate chin narrowed into a point like a cat's. She wasn't exactly pretty, but she was very striking. The black-haired boy beside her was more than striking. He was probably Jace's height, but seemed taller even sitting down. He was slender and muscular, with a pale, elegant, restless face, all cheekbones and dark eyes. There was something strangely familiar about him, as if Simon had met him before. The girl spoke first. Is that the vampire? She looked Simon up and down as if she were taking his measurements. I've never really been this close to a vampire before. Not one I wasn't planning to kill, at least. She cocked her head to the side. He's cute. For a downworlder.
You'll have to forgive her. She has the face of an angel and the manners of a Moloch demon, said the boy with a smile, getting to his feet. He held out his hand to Simon. I'm Sebastian. Sebastian Verloc. And this is my cousin, Aline Penhallow. Aline?
I don't shake hands with downworlders, Aline said, shrinking back against the couch cushions. They don't have souls, you know? Vampires.
Sebastian's smile disappeared. Aline.
It's true. That's why they can't see themselves in mirrors or go in the sun.
Very deliberately, Simon stepped backward into the patch of sunlight in front of the window. He felt the sun hot on his back, his hair. His shadow was cast long and dark across the floor, almost reaching Jace's feet. Aline took a sharp breath but said nothing. It was Sebastian who spoke, looking at Simon with curious black eyes.
So it's true. The Lightwood said, but I didn't think that we were telling the truth, Jace said, speaking for the first time since they'd come downstairs. We wouldn't lie about something like this. Simon's unique.
I kissed him once, Isabel said to no one in particular.
Aline's eyebrow shot up. They really do let you do whatever you want in New York, don't they? She said, sounding half horrified and half envious.
The last time I saw you, Izzy, you wouldn't even have considered.
The last time we all saw each other, Izzy was 8, Alex said. Things change. Now, Mom had to leave here in a hurry, so someone has to take her notes and records up to the guard for her. I'm the only one who's 18, so I'm the only one who can go while the Clave's in session.
We know, Isabel said, flopping down onto a couch. You've already told us that, like, 5 times.
Alec, who was looking important, ignored this. Jace, you brought the vampire here, so you're in charge of him. Don't let him go outside.
The vampire, Simon thought. It wasn't like Alec didn't know his name. He'd saved Alec's life once. Now he was the vampire. Even for Alec, who was prone to the occasional fit of inexplicable sullenness, this was obnoxious. Maybe it had something to do with being an Idris. Maybe Alec felt a greater need to assert his shadow hunterness here.
That's what you brought me down here to tell me? Don't let the vampire go outside? I wouldn't have done that anyway.
Jay slid onto the couch beside Aline, who looked pleased.
You better hurry up to the guard and back. God knows what depravity we might get up to here without your guidance.
Alec gazed at Jace with calm superiority. Try to hold it together. I'll be back in half an hour. He vanished through an archway that led to a long corridor. Somewhere in the distance, a door clicked shut.
You shouldn't bait him, Isabel said, shooting Jace a severe look. They did leave him in charge.
Aline, Simon couldn't help but notice, was sitting very close to Jace, their shoulders touching, even though there was plenty of room around them on the couch.
Did you ever think that in a past life, Alec was an old woman with 90 cats who was always yelling at the neighborhood kids to get off her lawn? Because I do, he said.
And Aline giggled.
Just because he's the only one who can go to the guard.
What's the guard?
Simon asked, tired of having no idea what anyone was talking about. Jace looked at him. His expression was cool, unfriendly. His hand was atop Aline's, where it rested on her thigh.
Sit down, he said, jerking his head toward an armchair. Or did you plan to hover in the corner like a bat? Great. Bat jokes.
Simon settled himself uncomfortably in the chair.
The guard is the official meeting place of the Clave, Sebastian said, apparently taking pity on Simon. It's where the law is made, and where the Consul and Inquisitor reside. Only adult shadow hunters are allowed onto its grounds when the Clave is in session.
In session? Simon asked, remembering what Jace had said earlier upstairs.
You mean, not because of me?
Sebastian laughed.
No.
Because of Valentine and the Mortal Instruments. That's why everyone's here. To discuss what Valentine's going to do next.
Jace said nothing, but at the sound of Valentine's name, his face tightened.
Well, he'll go after the mirror, Simon said. The third of the Mortal Instruments, right? Is it here in Idris? Is that why everyone's here?
There was a short silence before Isabel answered.
The thing about the mirror is that no one knows where it is. In fact, no one knows what it is.
It's a mirror, said Simon. You know, reflective glass? I'm just assuming.
What Isabel means, said Sebastian kindly, is that nobody knows anything about the mirror. There are multiple mentions of it in the Shadowhunter histories, but no specifics about where it is, what it looks like, or, most important, what it does.
We assume Valentine wants it, said Isabel, but that doesn't help much since no one's got a clue where it is. The Silent Brothers might have had an idea, but Valentine killed them all. There won't be more for at least a little while.
All of them? Simon demanded in surprise. I thought he only killed the ones in New York.
The Bone City isn't really in New York, Isabel said. It's like, remember the entrance to the Seelie Court in Central Park? Just because the entrance was there doesn't mean the court itself is under the park. It's the same with the Bone City. There are various entrances, but the city itself...
Isabel broke off as Aline shushed her with a quick gesture. Simon looked from her face to Jace's, to Sebastian's. They all had the same guarded expression, as if they'd just realized what they'd been doing, telling Nephilim secrets to a downworlder, a vampire. Not the enemy precisely, but certainly someone who couldn't be trusted. Aline was the first one to break the silence. Fixing her pretty dark gaze on Simon, she said,
So, what's it like being a vampire?
Aline? Isabel looked appalled. You can't just go around asking people what it's like to be a vampire.
I don't see why, Aline said. He hasn't been a vampire that long, has he? So he must remember what it was like being a person.
She turned back to Simon. Does blood still taste like blood to you? Or does it taste like something else now, like orange juice or something? Because I would think the taste of blood would...
It tastes like chicken, Simon said, just to shut her up.
Really?
Aline looked astonished.
He's making fun of you, Aline, said Sebastian, as well he should. I apologize for my cousin again, Simon. Those of us who are brought up outside Idris tend to have a little more familiarity with downworlders.
Weren't you brought up in Idris? Isabel asked. I thought your parents...
Isabel, Jace interrupted, but it was already too late.
Sebastian's expression darkened.
My parents are dead, he said. A demon nest near Calais. It's all right. It was a long time ago.
He waved away Isabel's protestation of sympathy.
My aunt, Aline's father's sister, brought me up at the Institute in Paris.
So you speak French? Isabel sighed. I wish I spoke another language. But Hodge never thought we needed to learn anything but ancient Greek and Latin, and nobody speaks those.
I also speak Russian and Italian, and some Romanian, Sebastian said with a modest smile. I could teach you some phrases. Romanian, that's impressive, said Jace. Not many people speak it.
Do you? Sebastian asked with interest.
Not really, Jace said with a smile so disarming Simon knew he was lying. My Romanian is pretty much limited to useful phrases, like, are these snakes poisonous, and, but you look much too young to be a police officer.
Sebastian didn't smile. There was something about his expression, Simon thought. It was mild. Everything about him was calm. But Simon had the sense that the mildness hid something beneath it that belied his outward tranquility.
I do like traveling, he said, his eyes on Jace.
But it's good to be back, isn't it? Jace paused in the act of playing with Aline's fingers.
What do you mean? Just that there's nowhere else quite like Idris. However much we Nephilim might make homes for ourselves elsewhere, don't you agree?
Why are you asking me?
Jace's look was icy.
Sebastian shrugged. Well, you lived here as a child, didn't you? And it's been years since you've been back. Or did I get that wrong?
You didn't get it wrong, Isabel said impatiently. Jace likes to pretend that everyone isn't talking about him, even when he knows they are.
They certainly are.
Though Jace was glaring at him, Sebastian seemed unruffled. Simon felt a sort of half-reluctant liking for the dark-haired shadow hunter boy. It was rare to find someone who didn't react to Jace's taunts.
These days in Idris, it's all anyone talks about. You, the mortal instruments, your father, your sister.
Clarissa was supposed to come with you, wasn't she? Aline said. I was looking forward to meeting her. What happened? Though Jace's expression didn't change, he drew his hand back from Aline's, curling it into a fist.
She didn't want to leave New York. Her mother's ill in the hospital.
He never says our mother, Simon thought. It's always her mother. It's weird, Isabel said. I really thought she wanted to come.
She did, said Simon. In fact...
Jace was on his feet so fast that Simon didn't even see him move.
Come to think of it, I have something I need to discuss with Simon, in private.
He jerked his head toward the double doors at the far end of the room, his eyes glittering a challenge.
Come on, vampire,
he said in a tone that left Simon with the distinct feeling that a refusal would probably end in some kind of violence.
Let's talk.
Chapter 3. Amatus. By late afternoon, Luke and Clary had left the lake far behind and were pacing over seemingly endless, broad, flat swatches of high grass. Here and there a gentle rise reared up into a high hill topped with black rocks. Clary was exhausted from staggering up and down the hills one after another, her boots slipping on the damp grass as if it were greased marble. By the time they left the fields behind for a narrow dirt road, her hands were bleeding and grass-stained. Luke stalked ahead of her with determined strides. Occasionally, he would point out items of interest in a somber voice, like the world's most depressed tour guide.
We just crossed Brosselin Plain,
he said as they climbed a rise and saw a tangled expanse of dark trees stretching away toward the west, where the sun hung low in the sky.
This is the forest. The woods used to cover most of the lowland of the country. Much of it was cut down to make way for the city. And to clear out the wolf packs and vampire nests that tended to crop up there. Brosselin Forest has always been a hiding place for downworlders.
They trudged along in silence as the road curved alongside the forest for several miles before taking an abrupt turn. The trees seemed to lift away as a ridge rose above them, and Clary blinked when they turned the corner of a high hill. Unless her eyes were deceiving her, there were houses down there. Small, white rows of houses, orderly as a munchkin village. We're here! She exclaimed and darted forward.
only stopping when she realized that Luke was no longer beside her. She turned and saw him standing in the middle of the dusty road, shaking his head.
No, he said, moving to catch up with her. That's not the city.
Then is it a town? You said there weren't any towns near here.
It's a graveyard. It's Alicante's City of Bones. Did you think the City of Bones was the only resting place we had?
He sounded sad.
This is the necropolis, the place we bury those who die in Idris. You'll see. We have to walk through it to get to Alicante.
Clary hadn't been to a graveyard since the night Simon had died, and the memory gave her a bone-deep shiver as she passed along the narrow lanes that threaded among the mausoleums like white ribbon. Someone took care of this place. The marble gleamed as if freshly scrubbed, and the grass was evenly cut. There were bunches of white flowers laid here and there on the graves. She thought at first they were lilies, but they had a spicy, unfamiliar scent that made her wonder if they were native to Idris. Each tomb looked like a little house. Some even had metal or wire gates, and the names of Shadowhunter families were carved over the doors. Cartwright, Merryweather, Hightower, Blackwell, Midwinter. She stopped at one. Herondale. She turned to look at Luke. That was the Inquisitor's name.
This is her family tomb. Look.
He pointed. Beside the door were white letters cut into the gray marble. They were names. Marcus Herondale. Stephen Herondale. They had both died in the same year. Much as Clary had hated the Inquisitor, she felt something twist inside her, a pity she couldn't help. To lose your husband and your son so close together? Three words in Latin ran under Stephen's name. Ave, atque, vale. What does that mean? She asked, turning to Luke.
It means hail and farewell. It's from a poem by Catullus. At some point it became what the Nephilim say during funerals, or when someone dies in battle. Now come on, it's better not to dwell on this stuff, Clary.
Luke took her shoulder and moved her gently away from the tomb. Maybe he was right, Clary thought. Maybe it was better not to think too much about death and dying right now. She kept her eyes averted as they made their way out of the necropolis. They were almost through the iron gates at the far end when she spotted a smaller mausoleum, growing like a white toadstool in the shadow of a leafy oak tree. The name above the door leaped out at her as if it had been written in lights. Fairchild.
Clary. Luke reached for her, but she was already gone. With a sigh, he followed her into the tree's shadow where she stood transfixed, reading the names of the grandparents and great-grandparents she had never even known she had. Aloysius Fairchild, Adele Fairchild, B. Nightshade, Granville Fairchild, and below all those names, Jocelyn Morgenstern B. Fairchild.
A wave of cold went over Clary. Seeing her mother's name there was like revisiting the nightmare she had sometimes when she was at her mother's funeral, and no one would tell her what had happened or how her mother had died.
But she's not dead, she said, looking up at Luke. She's not.
The Clave didn't know that, he told her gently.
Clary gasped. She could no longer hear Luke's voice or see him standing in front of her. Before her rose a jagged hillside, gravestones protruding from the dirt like snapped-off bones. A black headstone loomed up in front of her, letters cut unevenly into its face. Clarissa Morgenstern, birth 1991, death 2007. Under the words was a crudely drawn child sketch of a skull with gaping eye sockets. Clary staggered backward with a scream. Luke caught her by the shoulders.
Clary, what is it? What's wrong?
She pointed. There, look. But it was gone. The grass stretched out ahead of her, green and even, the white mausoleums neat and plain in their orderly rows. She twisted to look up at him. I saw my own gravestone, she said. It said I was going to die, now, this year. She shuddered. Luke looked grim.
It's the lake water, he said. You're starting to hallucinate. Come on, we haven't got much time left.
Jace marched Simon upstairs and down a short hallway lined with doors. He paused only to straight-arm one of them open, a scowl on his face.
In here, he said,
half-shoving Simon through the doorway. Simon saw what looked like a library inside, rows of bookshelves, long couches and armchairs. We should have some privacy.
He broke off as a figure rose nervously from one of the armchairs. It was a little boy with brown hair and glasses. He had a small, serious face, and there was a book clutched in one of his hands. Simon was familiar enough with Clary's reading habits to recognize it as a manga volume, even at a distance. Jace frowned.
Sorry, Max. We need the room. Grown-up talk.
But Izzy and Alec already kicked me out of the living room so they could have grown-up talk, Max complained. Where am I supposed to go?
Jace shrugged. Your room?
He jerked a thumb toward the door.
Time to do your duty for your country, kiddo. Scram.
Looking aggrieved, Max stalked past them both, his book clutched to his chest. Simon felt a twinge of sympathy. It sucked to be old enough to want to know what was going on, but so young you were always dismissed. The boy shot him a look as he went past, a scared, suspicious glance. That's a vampire, his eyes said. Come on. Jace hustled Simon into the room, shutting and locking the door behind them. With the door closed, the room was so dimly lit, even Simon found it dark. It smelled like dust. Jace walked across the floor and threw open the curtains at the far end of the room, revealing a tall, single-paned picture window that gave out onto a view of the canal just outside. Water splashed against the side of the house just a few feet below them, under stone railings carved with a weather-beaten design of runes and stars. Jace turned to Simon with a scowl.
What the hell is your problem, vampire? My problem? You're the one who practically dragged me out of there by my hair. Because you were about to tell them that Clary never canceled her plans to come to Idris. You know what would happen then? They'd contact her and arrange for her to come. And I already told you why that can't happen.
Simon shook his head.
I don't get you, he said. Sometimes you act like all you care about is Clary, and then you act like...
Jay stared at him. The air was full of dancing dust motes. They made a shimmering curtain between the two boys.
Act like what? You were flirting with Aline, Simon said. It didn't seem like all you cared about was Clary then.
That is so not your business, Jay said. And besides, Clary is my sister.
You do know that. I was there in the fairy court, too, Simon replied. I remember what the Seelie Queen said. The kiss the girl desires most will free her.
I bet you remember that. Burned into your brain, is it, vampire? Simon made a noise in the back of his throat that he hadn't even realized he was capable of making.
Oh, no, you don't. I'm not having this argument. I'm not fighting over Clary with you. It's ridiculous. Then why did you bring all this up? Because, Simon said, if you want me to lie, not to Clary, but to all your Shadow Hunter friends, if you want me to pretend that it was Clary's own decision not to come here, and if you want me to pretend that I don't know about her powers or what she can really do, then you have to do something for me.
Fine, Jace said. What is it you want?
Simon was silent for a moment, looking past Jace at the line of stone houses fronting the sparkling canal. Past their crenellated roofs he could see the gleaming tops of the demon towers.
I want you to do whatever you need to do to convince Clary that you don't have feelings for her. And don't tell me you're her brother. I already know that. Stop stringing her along when you know that whatever you two have has no future. And I'm not saying this because I want her for myself. I'm saying it because I'm her friend, and I don't want her hurt.
Jace looked down at his hands for a long moment without answering. They were thin hands, the fingers and knuckles scuffed with old calluses. The backs of them were laced with the thin white lines of old marks. They were a soldier's hands, not a teenage boy's.
I've already done that, he said. I told her I was only interested in being her brother.
Oh. Simon had expected Jace to fight him on this, to argue, not to just give up. A Jace who just gave up was new, and left Simon feeling almost ashamed for having asked. Clary never mentioned it to me, he wanted to say. But then why would she have? Come to think of it, she had seemed unusually quiet and withdrawn lately whenever Jace's name had come up.
Well, that takes care of that, I guess. There's one last thing.
Oh?
Jace spoke without much apparent interest. And what's that?
What was it Valentine said when Clary drew that rune on the ship? It sounded like a foreign language.
Meme something.
Mene, mene, tekel, ufarsin, Jace said with a faint smile.
You don't recognize it? It's from the Bible, vampire. The old one. That's your book, isn't it? Just because I'm Jewish doesn't mean I've memorized the Old Testament.
It's the writing on the wall. God hath numbered thy kingdom and brought it to an end. Thou art weighed in the balance and found wanting. It's a portent of doom. It means the end of an empire.
But what does it have to do with Valentine?
Not just Valentine, said Jace. All of us, the Clave and the Law. What Clary can do overturns everything they know to be true. No human being can create new runes, or draw the sort of runes Clary can. Only angels have that power. And since Clary can do that, well, it seems like a portent. Things are changing. The laws are changing. The old ways may never be the right ways again. Just as the rebellion of the angels ended the world as it was, it split heaven in half and created hell. This could mean the end of the Nephilim as they currently exist. This is our war in heaven, Vampire, and only one side can win it. And my father means it to be his.
Though the air was still cold, Clary was boiling hot in her wet clothes. Sweat ran down her face in rivulets, dampening the collar of her coat as Luke, his hand on her arm, hurried her along the road under a rapidly darkening sky. They were within sight of Alicante now. The city was in a shallow valley, bisected by a silvery river that flowed into one end of the city, seemed to vanish, and flowed again out the other. A tumble of honey-colored buildings with red slate roofs and a tangle of steeply winding dark streets backed up against the side of a steep hill. On the crown of the hill rose a dark stone edifice, pillared and soaring, with a glittering tower at each cardinal direction point, four in all. Scattered among the other buildings were the same tall, thin, glass-like towers, each one shimmering like quartz. They were like glass needles piercing the sky. The fading sunlight struck dull rainbows from their surfaces like a match striking sparks. It was a beautiful sight, and very strange. You have never seen a city till you have seen Alicante of the glass towers.
What was that? Luke said, overhearing. What did you say?
Clary hadn't realized she'd spoken out loud. Embarrassed, she repeated her words, and Luke looked at her in surprise.
Where did you hear that?
Hodge, Clary said. It was something Hodge said to me. Luke peered at her more closely.
You're flushed, he said. How are you feeling?
Clary's neck was aching, her whole body on fire, her mouth dry. I'm fine, she said. Let's just get there, okay?
Okay.
Luke pointed. At the edge of the city where the buildings ended, Clary could see an archway, two sides curving to a pointed top. A shadow hunter in black gear stood watch inside the shadow of the archway.
That's the North Gate. It's where downworlders can legally enter the city, provided they've got the paperwork. Guards are posted there night and day. Now, if we were on official business, or had permission to be here, we'd go in through it.
But there aren't any walls around the city, Clary pointed out. It doesn't seem like much of a gate.
The wards are invisible, but they're there. The demon towers control them. They have for 1,000 years. You'll feel it when you pass through them.
He glanced one more time at her flushed face, concern crinkling the corners of his eyes.
Are you ready?
She nodded. They moved away from the gate along the east side of the city, where buildings were more thickly clustered. With a gesture to be quiet, Luke drew her toward a narrow opening between two houses. Clary shut her eyes as they approached, almost as if she expected to be smacked in the face with an invisible wall as soon as they stepped onto the streets of Alicante. It wasn't like that. She felt a sudden pressure, as if she were in an airplane that was dropping. Her ears popped, and then the feeling was gone, and she was standing in the alley between the buildings. Just like an alley in New York. Like every alley in the world, apparently. It smelled like cat pee. Clary peered around the corner of one of the buildings. A larger street stretched away up the hill, lined with small shops and houses. There's no one around, she observed with some surprise. In the fading light, Luke looked gray.
There must be a meeting going on up at the guard. It's the only thing that could get everyone off the streets at once.
But isn't that good? There's no one around to see us.
It's good and bad. The streets are mostly deserted, which is good. But anyone who does happen by will be much more likely to notice and remark on us.
I thought you said everyone was in the guard.
Luke smiled faintly.
Don't be so literal, Clary. I meant most of the city. Children, teenagers, anyone exempted from the meeting, they won't be there.
Teenagers. Clary thought of Jace, and despite herself, her pulse leaped forward like a horse charging out of the starting gate at a race. Luke frowned, almost as if he could read her thoughts.
As of now, I'm breaking the law by being an Alicante without declaring myself to the clave at the gate. If anyone recognizes me, we could be in real trouble.
He glanced up at the narrow strip of russet sky visible between the rooftops.
We have to get off the streets.
I thought we were going to your friend's house.
We are, and she's not a friend, precisely.
Then who?
Just follow me.
Luke ducked into a passage between two houses, so narrow that Clary could reach out and touch the wall of both houses with her fingers as they made their way down it and onto a cobblestoned, winding street lined with shops. The buildings themselves looked like a cross between a Gothic dreamscape and a children's fairy tale. The stone facings were carved with all manner of creatures out of myth and legend. The heads of monsters were a prominent feature, interspersed with winged horses, something that looked like a house on chicken legs, mermaids, and, of course, angels. Gargoyles jutted from every corner, their snarling faces contorted, and everywhere there were runes. Splashed across doors, hidden in the design of an abstract carving, dangling from thin metal chains like wind chimes that twisted in the breeze. Runes for protection, for good luck, even for good business. Staring at them all, Clary began to feel a little dizzy. They walked in silence, keeping to the shadows. The cobblestone street was deserted, shop doors shut and barred. Clary cast furtive glances into the windows as they passed. It was strange to see a display of expensive decorated chocolates in one window, and in the next an equally lavish display of deadly-looking weapons, cutlasses, maces, nail-studded cudgels, and an array of serif blades in different sizes.
No guns, she said.
Her own voice sounded very far away. Luke blinked at her.
What?
Shadow hunters, she said. They never seem to use guns.
Runes keep gunpowder from igniting, he said. No one knows why. Still, Nephilim have been known to use the occasional rifle on lycanthropes. It doesn't take a rune to kill us, just silver bullets.
His voice was grim. Suddenly his head went up. In the dim light, it was easy to imagine his ears pricking forward like a wolf's.
Voices, he said. They must be finished at the guard.
He took her arm and pulled her sideways off the main street. They emerged into a small square with a well at its center. A masonry bridge arched over a narrow canal just ahead of them. In the fading light, the water in the canal looked almost black. Clary could hear the voices herself now, coming from the streets nearby.
They were raised, angry-sounding.
Clary's dizziness increased. She felt as if the ground were tilting under her, threatening to send her sprawling. She leaned back against the wall of the alley, gasping for air.
Clary, Luke said. Clary, are you all right?
His voice sounded thick, strange. She looked at him and the breath died in her throat. His ears had grown long and pointed, his teeth razor sharp, his eyes a fierce yellow. Luke, she whispered, what's happening to you?
Clary.
He reached for her, his hands oddly elongated, the nails sharp and rust-colored.
Is something wrong?
She screamed, twisting away from him. She wasn't sure why she felt so terrified. She'd seen Luke change before, and he'd never harmed her. But the terror was a live thing inside her, uncontrollable. Luke caught at her shoulders, and she cringed away from him, away from his yellow animal eyes, even as he hushed her, begging her to be quiet in his ordinary human voice.
Clary, please.
Let me go! Let me go! But he didn't.
It's the water. You're hallucinating. Clary, try to keep it together.
He drew her toward the bridge, half-dragging her. She could feel tears running down her face, cooling her burning cheeks.
It's not real. Try to hold on, please, he said, helping her onto the bridge.
She could smell the water below it, green and stale. Things moved below the surface of it. As she watched, a black tentacle emerged from the water, its spongy tip lined with needle teeth. She cringed away from the water, unable to scream, a low moaning coming from her throat. Luke caught her as her knees buckled, swinging her up into his arms.
He hadn't carried her since she was 5 or 6 years old.
"Clary," he said.
But the rest of his words melded and blurred into a nonsensical roar as they stepped down off the bridge. They raced past a series of tall, thin houses that almost reminded Clary of Brooklyn row houses. Or maybe she was just hallucinating her own neighborhood? The air around them seemed to warp as they went on, the lights of the houses blazing up around them like torches, the canal shimmering with an evil phosphorescent glow. Clary's bones felt as if they were dissolving inside her body.
"Here."
Luke jerked to a halt in front of a tall canal house. He kicked hard at the door, shouting. It was painted a bright, almost garish red, a single rune splashed across it in gold. The rune melted and ran as Clary stared at it, taking the shape of a hideous, grinning skull. "It's not real," she told herself fiercely, stifling her scream with her fist, biting down until she tasted blood in her mouth. The pain cleared her head momentarily. The door flew open, revealing a woman in a dark dress, her face creased with a mixture of anger and surprise. Her hair was long, a tangled gray-brown cloud escaping from two braids. Her blue eyes were familiar. A witch-like runestone gleamed in her hand.
"Who is it?" she demanded. "What do you want?"
"Amatis." Luke moved into the pool of witchlight, Clary in his arms.
"It's me."
The woman blanched and tottered, putting out a hand to brace herself against the doorway.
"Lucian?"
Luke tried to take a step forward, but the woman, Amatis, blocked his path. She was shaking her head so hard that her braids whipped back and forth.
"How can you come here, Lucian? How dare you come here?"
"I had very little choice." Luke tightened his hold on Clary. She bit back a cry. Her whole body felt as if it were on fire, every nerve ending burning with pain.
"You have to go, then," Amatis said. "If you leave immediately."
"I'm not here for me. I'm here for the girl. She's dying."
As the woman stared at him, he said,
"Amatis, please. She's Jocelyn's daughter."
There was a long silence during which Amatis stood like a statue, unmoving in the doorway. She seemed frozen, whether from surprise or horror, Clary couldn't guess. Clary clenched her fist. Her palm was sticky with blood where the nails dug in, but even the pain wasn't helping now. The world was coming apart in soft colors, like a jigsaw puzzle drifting on the surface of water. She barely heard Amatis's voice as the older woman stepped back from the doorway and said, "Very well, Lucian. You can bring her inside." By the time Simon and Jace came back into the living room, Aline had laid food out on the low table between the couches. There was bread and cheese, slices of cake, apples, and even a bottle of wine, which Max was not allowed to touch. He sat in the corner with a plate of cake, his book open on his lap. Simon sympathized with him. He felt just as alone in the laughing, chatting group as Max probably did. He watched Aline touch Jace's wrist with her fingers as she reached for a piece of apple, and felt himself tense. "But this is what you want him to do," he told himself. And yet somehow he couldn't get rid of the sense that Clary was being disregarded. Jace met his eyes over Aline's head and smiled. Somehow, even though he wasn't a vampire, he was able to manage a smile that seemed to be all pointed teeth. Simon looked away, glancing around the room. He noticed that the music he'd heard earlier wasn't coming from a stereo at all, but from a complicated-looking mechanical contraption. He thought about striking up a conversation with Isabel, but she was chatting with Sebastian, whose elegant face was bent attentively down to hers. Jace had laughed at Simon's crush on Isabel once, but Sebastian could doubtless handle her. Shadow hunters were brought up to handle anything, weren't they? Although the look on Jace's face when he'd said that he planned to be only Clary's brother made Simon wonder.
"We're out of wine," Isabel declared, setting the bottle down on the table with a thump. "I'm going to get some more."
With a wink at Sebastian, she disappeared into the kitchen.
"If you don't mind my saying so, you seem a little quiet."
It was Sebastian, leaning over the back of Simon's chair with a disarming smile. For someone with such dark hair, Simon thought, Sebastian's skin was very fair, as if he didn't go out in the sun much.
"Everything all right?"
Simon shrugged.
"There aren't a lot of openings for me in the conversation. It seems to be either about shadow hunter politics or people I've never heard of, or both."
The smile disappeared.
"We can be something of a closed circle, we Nephilim.
It's the way of those who are shut out from the rest of the world.
Don't you think you shut yourselves out? You despise ordinary humans.
Despise is a little strong, said Sebastian.
And do you really think the world of humans would want anything to do with us?
All we are is a living reminder that whenever they comfort themselves that there are no real vampires, no real demons or monsters under the bed, they're lying.
He turned his head to look at Jace, who, Simon realized, had been staring at them both in silence for several minutes.
Don't you agree?
Jace smiled.
Dece cre cava auscultum conversatia?
Sebastian met his glance with a look of pleasant interest.
Mai umarit decuns aiajuns aich, he replied. Num dau sama daca numa plach or daca yetatat de banutor cutuata luma.
He got to his feet. I appreciate the Romanian practice, but if you don't mind, I'm going to see what's taking Isabel so long in the kitchen.
He disappeared through the doorway, leaving Jay staring after him with a puzzled expression.
What's wrong? Does he not speak Romanian after all?
Simon asked.
No,
said Jace. A small frown line had appeared between his eyes.
No, he speaks it all right.
Before Simon could ask him what he meant by that, Alec entered the room. He was frowning just as he had been when he'd left. His gaze lingered momentarily on Simon, a look almost of confusion in his blue eyes. Jace glanced up.
Back so soon?
Not for long. Alec reached down to pluck an apple off the table with a gloved hand.
I just came back to get him, he said, gesturing toward Simon with the apple. He's wanted at the guard.
Aline looked surprised.
Really?
She said. But Jace was already rising from the couch, disentangling his hand from hers.
Wanted for what? He said with a dangerous calm. I hope you found that out before you promised to deliver him, at least.
Of course I asked. Alec snapped. I'm not stupid.
Oh, come on, said Isabel.
She had reappeared in the doorway with Sebastian, who was holding a bottle.
Sometimes you are a bit stupid, you know. Just a bit.
She repeated as Alec shot her a murderous glare.
They're sending Simon back to New York, he said. Through the portal.
But he just got here, Isabel protested with a pout. That's no fun.
It's not supposed to be fun, Izzy. Simon coming here was an accident, so the Clave thinks the best thing is for him to go home.
Great, Simon said. Maybe I'll even make it back before my mother notices I'm gone. What's the time difference between here and Manhattan?
You have a mother? Aline looked amazed. Simon chose to ignore this.
Seriously, he said, as Alec and Jace exchanged glances. It's fine. All I want is to get out of this place.
You'll go with him, Jace said to Alec, and make sure everything's all right?
They were looking at each other in a way that was familiar to Simon. It was the way he and Clary sometimes looked at each other, exchanging coded glances when they didn't want their parents to know what they were planning.
What? He said, looking from one to the other. What's wrong?
They broke their stare. Alec glanced away, and Jace turned a bland and smiling look on Simon.
Nothing, he said. Everything's fine. Congratulations, vampire. You get to go home.
Chapter 4. Daylighter. Night had fallen over Alicante when Simon and Alec left the Penhallows' house and headed uphill toward the guard. The streets of the city were narrow and twisting, wending upward like pale stone ribbons in the moonlight. The air was cold, though Simon felt it only distantly. Alec walked along in silence, striding ahead of Simon as if pretending that he were alone. In his previous life, Simon would have had to hurry, panting to keep up. Now he discovered he could pace Alec just by speeding up his stride.
Must suck, Simon said finally, as Alec stared morosely ahead. Getting stuck with escorting me, I mean.
Alec shrugged.
I'm 18. I'm an adult, so I have to be the responsible one. I'm the only one who can go in and out of the guard when the Clave's in session. And besides, the consul knows me. What's a consul?
He's like a very high officer of the Clave. He counts the votes of the council, interprets the law for the Clave, and advises them in the Inquisitor. If you head up an institute and you run into a problem you don't know how to deal with, you call the consul.
He advises the Inquisitor? I thought, isn't the Inquisitor dead?
Alec snorted. That's like saying, isn't the president dead?
Yeah, the Inquisitor died, now there's a new one. Inquisitor Aldertree.
Simon glanced down the hill toward the dark water of the canals far below. They'd left the city behind them,